And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Without Frontiers, was written by Helen Kandel Hyman and stars Arnold Moss and Edwin Jerome. Today's program was inspired by an item appearing in a newspaper column, but for purposes of dramatization, all names of persons and places are purely fictional.
Kindness knows no frontiers. It's as wide as the need is wide.
The Olamot Divaroch Hirusei, the Yamelich Malchusei.
It was late morning in the little synagogue of Naylorsville. As the Sabbath service drew to a close, the rabbi spoke the opening words of the Kaddish, the traditional prayer for the dead. Here and there, a man or woman rose to repeat the prayer and commemorate the death of a father, a mother, a child. With the mourners stood a tall man in a white clerical collar, and with the mourners he spoke the well-known words. The congregation knew this man well. They knew his name. He was the minister of the town's Episcopal Church. They were not surprised to see a minister with them, because they knew his story, a story which he himself had told them many times. It began more than 20 years ago in a town not so far away. It began after dark, when three boys stood at the back entrance of a general store.
There. I knew that window would open easy. Okay, you and I will go inside and look for the money. Jerry will stand watch. You go first. We'll give you a boost.
Why me first, Tom?
See, Tommy's scared. Jack, for the last time, nothing's going to happen, even if you get caught. I know old Weinstein. He's a pushover. If he catches you breaking into his store, all you have to do is give him a sob story. Tell him your ma's sick or your pop beats you. Tell him you're hungry. He'd never call a cop in a million years. Come on now, will you?
Oh, okay.
There you go.
I'm in.
I'm coming now.
Here, I'll just give you a boost. Get down, Tom, quick!
It must be Johnson. If he gets me this time, I'm cooked.
Hey, get me out of here. Tom, Jerry!
Come on, Jerry, run.
Yeah. Please, fellas, wait for me. Help me out of here. Wait.
That was the beginning of the story, the very beginning. It continued later that night when Jack sat in Berish Weinstein's house. Jack's hands and knees were trembling as he sat there. Even his voice trembled as he tried to talk, and he knew he must talk if he was ever to get out of that room alone without Patrolman Johnson.
I didn't want to come with him, honest, I didn't.
But you said you had nothing to eat for dinner, and you were tired of being hungry.
Yes, that's it.
But I thought you said your father beat you and sent you to bed without a supper.
Well, that's right, he did. But there wasn't anything for supper anyhow.
Your father beat you. The father who is so sick he cannot move.
No. I mean, it was my ma. She beat me and
Weinstein, I got work to do. I can't stick around here all night and listen to this.
Please, officer, the boy has not finished yet.
Finished? He doesn't need to. You don't believe a word of it, Mr. Weinstein. You know you don't.
Of this story, perhaps not. But there must be some good reason why a boy starts stealing at this age.
Mr. Weinstein, why do you always side with these boys when they break the law? Why don't you take some advice from me? These boys start out bad and they get worse.
I think we look at these boys through different eyes, officer. Your eyes see the crimes that they have committed, and it is your job to do that. But our writings tell us that just because a man or a boy has committed a crime, he has not forfeited his whole worth as an individual. I know that man is made in God's image, and my eyes look to find something of God in each one of these boys.
You always talk circles around me, Mr. Weinstein. You always talk me out of doing the things I should do. I know what's going to happen now. I'm going to walk out of here and let you refuse to press charges against this boy.
You are a wise man, my friend. That is just what you are going to do.
There wasn't much talk after Johnson left. No lecture, no threats, no questions. Berish just told the boy to go home and sleep. He said he'd come round in the morning and visit the family. But there wasn't much sleep for Jack that night. He lay and waited and dreaded the moment in the morning when his mother would learn what had happened. But when Berish came, there was no talk of stealing, no talk of police. Mrs. Morton simply found him a kind man who happened to take an interest in her son. Berish stayed only long enough to learn the story of poverty and hardship in the household, and then to ask one last question.
You would not object then, Mrs. Morton, if Jack did some work for me?
No. Good. It's about time Jack helped out a bit. He's the oldest, isn't he? Here I've been supporting three boys since their father died 6 years ago, doing laundry all day long, me with a bad back. Jack can work honestly and bring me home money at night. I guess that's all I want. I don't care who he works for.
So here, at least, Berish met no opposition. He was free to help the boy to try to bring out in him that divine quality he believed existed in everyone. It was in his own home with Sarah, his housekeeper, that Berish did meet opposition.
Now, Mr. Weinstein, I have enough. I've kept your house and worked in your store for 30 years, and I've always done what you asked. But when it comes to taking in a boy who tried to rob you less than 24 hours ago, that's too much.
He seems like a good boy, Sarah. He has had a hard time, that is all. If we help him a little, I don't think
that's
he would
what
do
you
that.
Always say, with a little help. That's what you've done all your life, helped others and made me help them with you. You're a good man, I know that, but you spend most of your time now in the synagogue or in your study with your books. I'm the one that's going to have to watch this boy, keep him from stealing things from under our noses. And I'm just too old to start that now.
You won't give this boy a chance to prove he is more than a thief. Oh, Sarah, remember what it says in the Talmud. He who destroys one person has dealt a blow at the whole universe. And similarly, he who makes life livable for one person has sustained the whole world.
I'm too old and busy to sustain the world, Mr. Weinstein. Besides, this boy is a total stranger to us.
The Talmud tells us we must offer our help to everyone in our community, whether he is a friend or a stranger.
Oh.
Whether he is of our faith or another. Kindness knows no frontiers, Sarah. It is as wide as the need is wide. Have I never told you this before?
Have you never told me? I know these words of the Talmud by heart. You've said them to me so often. We are obligated to feed all men residing among us, even as we feed Jews. We are obligated to visit all sick, even as we visit the Jewish sick.
That's very good, Sarah. I didn't realize you had been listening to me so carefully all these years.
Mm. Sometimes I seem to hear against my will and act against it, too.
Well, then do it again, Sarah. Do it again. Suppose this was your
child. Now, don't stop that, Mr. Weinstein. Neither of us has families, I know, but I don't go looking for one. You've made the town your family. You've made every child in trouble your child.
Oh, well, there is a weakness in me, is there not? Yes. But it helps me to forget how incomplete my life is. I cannot forget the place in the Talmud where it says, he who is without a wife lives without joy, without blessing, without peace. I am getting old, you know, and I will die soon. And I will leave no one to say Kaddish for me. Oh, I am rich, yes. I will never have what the poorest father has. So, while I live, at least, let me have some of the pleasures of a family. Don't take that from me.
No, Mr. Weinstein, I won't. This boy can come, and I'll give him work. He'll take the money from your store and the spoons from your house. But
I can't take anything away from you that you want.
And so a new life began for Jack. At first, the difference wasn't so great. It was just working for Sarah, helping out in the store, delivering packages, taking stock, running errands here, there, anywhere she sent him. But soon, through Berish's influence, there was more work.
I've been watching that boy of yours, Mr. Weinstein. He seems to be working out nicely. Oh, I know I said he wouldn't at first, but I think I'll take a chance with him after all. Tell him I can use him 3 afternoons a week working in my garden.
I know Jack's busy, Berish, but do you think he could help me out a few mornings a week at the bakery just until the holidays are over?
The Blackwell boy who was working in the synagogue has left, Mr. Weinstein. You know the job he did, cleaning the synagogue every Friday afternoon and then fixing it up after services on Saturday. The rabbi wondered if you think Jack Morton could take over.
And so the work continued. More and more of it and more money to bring home at night. But still, it was just work. Jack came across town every night to his own family, to the places and the people he'd always known.
Hi, Jack. How are your friends across town?
What do you mean, my friends?
Well, aren't they?
They give me work. I do jobs for them, and they pay me, that's all. If I have any friends, they're right here where they always were. Well, see you later, Tom.
It was just work during those early months, just jobs to do. And soon the whole community knew that Jack was always available to help if extra hands were needed. But soon, there began to be more than just work in his life.
David was 13 last month, Jack, and that's a very important birthday for our boys. So next week we're having a big party for him. We call it a bar mitzvah. Could you stay over that night and help out with the dishes?
Sure.
Oh, and Jack, if you'd like to come to the party first, I know we'd all love to have you.
Mother fixed this package for you, Jack. You told her you'd never tasted any Passover cakes, so she baked some specially for you to take home.
I'm making your favorite soup for Saturday, Jack. Want to come over and have dinner with us after you're finished at the synagogue?
Berish watched as his friends opened up their homes and their lives to this boy who had been a stranger to them. And he was happy because the boy still came to him often. Sometimes just to talk and sometimes to ask questions about Jewish customs or ways of living which confused him. But Berish never let the boy lose himself completely in the new community. He noticed that Jack now came to the Sabbath services and slowly began to follow the prayers in English and join in the songs. So after service was over each week, he would ask the same question.
Well, Jack, did you listen to the sermon today?
Sort of, Mr. Weinstein. I got lost in a couple of places, but I caught some of it.
Good. Now, don't forget to go to your church tomorrow. Stop in on Monday, eh? Let me know what your minister had to say in his sermon.
So it became a custom then for Jack to meet Berish every Monday. And while Sarah gave them lunch, they'd talk together about sermons and other things. Jack learned many things from Berish just from these talks, but he learned from the others, too. He learned the pattern of the Sabbath because he shared in it. He went to funerals and came to know the words of the Kaddish. He learned the meaning of the festivals, shared in their excitement, the preparations, and then finally in the celebrations. He was happy except, and there was an exception, except when he was with his own friends and felt himself an outsider.
Hey, Jack.
Hi, Tom.
You coming to the picnic on Saturday?
Can't, I've got to work.
Got to or want to?
I've got to. It's my job, isn't it?
Yeah. At least that's the reason you give.
It was after an incident like this that the unhappiness came. And then for a few days the work would seem dull and the jobs tiring. But then it would be forgotten until the next time. except that with each next time, he seemed to feel more trapped, more rebellious. Until one day...
Jack! Hey, Jack, wait up, will you?
I can't, Tom. I'm late.
Oh, you can wait for this. Listen, I got a job.
What?
A real one. You know that new box factory that just opened?
The one over at Claremont Street. What about it?
Well, they started hiring today, and they have some jobs for fellas our age. They hired me this morning at $15 a week.
$15 a week?
That's what I said. That's more than you make, isn't it? All that work you do. They've still got some jobs open over there. Why don't you go try for one?
Well, I don't know.
Don't know if they'll let you?
What do you mean, let me? They can't stop me.
And why don't you go down to the factory? Show this Weinstein you're not a kid anymore for him to order around. Listen, Jack, you've been working for them for 2 years, and what are you doing? The same old thing. Run here, run there. Help me out tomorrow. Give me a couple of hours next Monday. Look, kid, get yourself a real job.
I'll go tomorrow. Today I...
Ah, you'll never go. You'll be stuck with them for the rest of your life.
Jack called for Berish at the synagogue, as he did every Monday. And they walked home together in silence. But the silence was broken as soon as they reached Berish's study.
Mr. Weinstein, I've got something to tell you.
Oh?
I'm leaving.
Why?
I'm going to take a real job now. I'm old enough.
Oh, you are? I know. What is the job?
I'm going to work at the new box factory at $15 a week.
This is a real job?
I know. You don't think much of working in a factory, do you? You look down on that kind of job. Well, I can tell you it's better than running errands.
Have I ever shown you I look down on any work? You know how I began when I came to this country. A junk dealer. A junk dealer. Well, who am I to look down on another man's work? And doesn't the Talmud tell me I am a creature of God, and my neighbor is also his creature? My work is in the city. His is in the field. As he cannot excel in my work, I cannot excel in his. But you may be tempted to say, I do great things, and he does small things. We have learned that it matters not whether one does much or little, if only he directs his heart to serve the divine purpose.
So oh, don't lecture me now. You can't stop me from doing this.
Stop you? I wouldn't try. How could I? But I see now I have made a mistake. I had let myself make plans for you, and I should have consulted you before I made them. You see, my son...
I'm not your son. You're not my father. You have no right to lecture me and tell me what to do. I can decide what's good for me.
I know you can. And this is another mistake that I have made. Often during my life, and so often in recent years, I have been conscious of the fact that I am alone. Other men have less than I, but they have a family. Wives, children. I have no one. So, sometimes I let myself think of you as a son. I made plans for you as I might have planned for my own child. But I was wrong. And when I thought of sending you to college, I should have talked to...
Why, I never even finished high school.
Oh, well, that doesn't matter. I know the ability you have. I have seen how quickly you can learn. I had planned to engage tutors for you to prepare for the entrance examination.
Oh, but it's too late for that. I'm too old to start studying again now. Anyway, my mother needs the money I earn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have thought of that, and I had planned to give you an allowance so you would be free to study. You're not so old. You're just at the age when you can make the great decision whether you will be a man or a nothing.
There you go again, trying to tell me I'll be a nothing if I take this job. Tom told me you'd never let me go. Even this college business is just another way to keep me tied to you, another way for you to tell me what to do. You said I can make a decision, and I'm making it right now. I'm starting that job tomorrow.
Word got around pretty soon that Jack had left his work. And people wondered what had happened, but no one liked to ask Berish, and Berish said nothing. On Friday evening, there was no one to open the synagogue, so Berish did it himself. Set everything in order for the service and waited until the others joined him. Afterwards, he walked home alone in the dark. But just as he reached his house, he felt a hand on his arm.
Oh, hello, Jack.
You've been waiting for me to come back, Mr. Weinstein?
No. No, I learned not to wait a long time ago.
I didn't take that job.
No.
Are you happy I didn't?
Are you?
I don't know. I don't know. All I know is... Well, I want to go to college. Are you still willing to send me?
Yes, Jack. I am still willing.
But I want you to know something. I'm doing this because I want to do it. Not because you're making me. I decided it for myself.
Then the work began. Hard work of a different kind. Long hours of studying with different teachers, history, literature, science, geometry, Latin, German, whole school years, compressed into a few months. And Berish never discussed college, careers, futures.
Just study, Jack. Keep on learning. Talk to your tutors. And when you think you are ready and you know what you want to do with what you have learned, just tell me.
It took a long time. For a while, Jack did as Berish said, just studied. One tutor left, another came. One subject was finished, another begun. For a while, it seemed as if the work had no direction, no goal, except a passing mark on an examination. But one day, almost without knowing it, Jack knew where the work was taking him. He knew it one evening while he was talking to his mother.
Jack, how much longer is this going on?
What, Mother?
This studying, these books. I can't manage forever on the allowance your friend gives us, you know. The other boys are getting older. They need more, and I'm getting older, too.
I know, Mother, but it won't be very long now before I can help more.
I hope I live to see it. Mr. Weinstein made me a lot of fine promises about the great man you'd become after all this studying. Well, what are you going to be, anyhow? A doctor? A lawyer? Or is Mr. Weinstein going to take you into his business?
Oh, no, I'm sure I wouldn't want that. I don't think he'd want it for me, either. I don't think I'd make a very good doctor or a lawyer, either.
Then what will you be? Is all this studying going to make you too good for ordinary work? Do you think you're better than everyone else now?
Oh, Mother, no, no. It's just that while I've been studying, I feel as if I've been looking for something. I didn't know what it was. I think now I've been looking for something Berish Weinstein has.
But you said you wouldn't want to work in his business.
I didn't mean that. I mean something about the way he lives. He seems to have found a way to live which makes him happy. But makes hundreds of other people happy or better, too. Not by giving them money, but by helping them to have more in their lives. A kind of peace and understanding of themselves and everyone else, too. Maybe that's what I want. To get to know the world, and yet to be able to live in it in peace. I guess I want something else, too. I want to be able to help other people find the same thing.
It wasn't long afterwards that Jack felt he could come to Berish and tell him he knew what he wanted to do.
I think I know now, Mr. Weinstein.
What have you decided, Jack?
Well, I'm not sure you'll be...
I have told you before, Jack. This is your decision.
Then I think I'd like to be a minister.
A minister?
I'd like to go to theological school.
Are you sure this is your decision? You haven't made one you thought would please me?
Please you? I've been afraid to tell you. I mean, you're a devout Jew, and if I become a minister,
Did you think that as a religious man I would ever prevent another man from serving God? You are not of my faith. But I have never wanted you to forget your own church, your own people. We could never serve God in the same way, you and I. But somehow, I feel sure that we both will be directing our lives toward the same ultimate goal.
Berish was happy at the decision. He lived now only for the day when Jack would be finished with his studies and be ordained as a minister. And when that day came, he left the synagogue and traveled many miles to see the ceremony. And then... quite soon afterwards, as if he had only been waiting until Jack's studies were over, Berish died quietly in the synagogue where he had spent most of his last years. As the Reverend Dr. John Morton stood at the funeral, he looked around at the group of mourners, and he felt himself waiting for the family to come forward to say the Kaddish for the dead man. But he knew that there was no family to come forward for Berish Weinstein.
The unmarried person lives without joy, without blessing, without peace. I was wrong, Jack. I let myself think of you as a son, but I was wrong. I have no son. I leave no one to say Kaddish for me. I will die alone as I have lived. Alone.
Rabbi, would I be permitted to say the Kaddish with you?
Yes, Jack. I think you're the person who should say it.
Yiskadol v'yiskadosh nei rabo. Yolamod ivro hirusei v'yamelich malchusei.
And that's why it happens that once a year on the anniversary of this death, the minister of the little church in Naylorsville comes to the synagogue on the other side of the town, and a Kaddish is said for a father who was not a father, by a son who was not a son.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our Eternal Eye drama today, Without Frontiers, was written by Helen Kandel Hyman. The music was composed by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical music. Featured in the cast were Arnold Moss as the narrator, Edwin Jerome as Berish Weinstein, and Larry Robinson as Jack. The production was under the direction of Edward King. This is Mel Brandt speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.